All right. Welcome back. Fade out that music there. Welcome back. It's Thursday, February 3rd, 11:10, Chem 12A. And all right, music is killed. We're ready to go. So how's everybody doing? Make sure I have the chat window up so I can see you guys, hear you guys, read whatever you throw out at me so that we can get questions going as things go on. We had a good lecture last time on Tuesday. We're going to pick it up from where we left off. We were talking about molecular orbital theory, natural bonding theory, and looking at theories, particularly natural bonding theory, that helps us to understand the geometries associated with organic molecules. And so we're trying to figure out how carbon utilizes its S and P orbitals in order to come up with geometries that align with tetrahedral, with trigonal planar, with trigonal pyramidal in some cases, with linear, all of these different geometries, and how these elements reorganize their orbitals to have the geometries that they have. And it's much more involved than VSEPR theory. VSEPR theory was very simple. It took a look at how many elements were around a central element and said that they all repel one another. And because they repel one another, they try to get as much space as they can around that central element. And that is where the geometries result from. VSEPR theory is an outgrowth out of natural bonding theory. And it was a much simplified model in order to operate with Chem 3, Chem 1A, Chem 1B. And so as we get into Chem 12, we need to go deeper. We need better theories to understand these. And the natural bonding theory is really one of those first steps in terms of doing this. So let's jump back in with that natural bonding theory and sort of reiterate what we did for carbon for tetrahedral. And then we'll take that idea, take it forward. So let me start a screen share with the iPad. Seems like this one is still working. It is indeed. Okay, so natural bonding theory. And the idea here is that we go from atomic orbitals to hybrid orbitals. And then we go to molecular orbitals, yes, but they're more so a bonding orbital than I would even go molecular orbital. So we could say bonding orbital, or here, molecular orbital. And so that's the progression that we go through and in terms of doing these. And when I say we're going from atomic orbitals to hybrid orbitals, these are a linear combination. So we're taking here and we're doing a linear combination. Which means that these linear combinations, they are additions essentially, but they're weighted additions. Meaning that we put weights on the different orbitals. So what we did to begin with is we looked at how does carbon get to being tetrahedral? What we said is that we start off with these orbitals that are in particular orientation. So we can start off with the 2s, we can add to it the 2px, the 2py, and the 2pz. So if this is the x orientation, we'll come out here and we'll add in 2px. We'll add in 2py. We'll add in 2pz. And when we add all these together, what we get is, that's supposed to be Z. Now, I don't need a calculator for that. 2πz, what we get out of this is we get 4 hybrid orbitals. I always want to throw an E on the hybrid orbitals. And that these guys, when we look at them, their geometry is very much P-like. And so it comes out into the X orientation and then a smaller lobe on the backside. And this is called an SP3 hybrid. And now because there are 4 of those hybrids, those 4 hybrid orbitals then align in a tetrahedral arrangement around the central element, giving us the geometry, the tetrahedral geometry. So that's how we arrive at that tetrahedral geometry. And then it is those SP3 hybrids that are used with other atomic orbitals or hybrid orbitals from other elements to come together to make bonding orbitals. So what we showed then was that we could take carbon, and if we had a carbon atom here and we utilize the SP3 orbital, the SP3 hybrid, that we can make bonding orbitals with other elements such as hydrogen, where they can come together in phase. And we'll show both the in phase and the out of phase bonding so that we get an orbital here that encompasses the hydrogen and the carbon, and we get a small backside lobe to that orbital as well. In fact, I've probably exaggerated that more than I need to. It's a very small lobe that's on the backside. And on the other sense, what we get is we get an orbital that has electron density here, some electron density here, and then another lobe that's out here. And so this is the sigma bond, or we'll say sigma bonding orbital. And this is the sigma star antibonding.
Could you scoot it up a little bit? I didn't get to finish the where you're at 4 hybrid orbitals. Thank you. All right, I got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and so when we get these orbitals, I'm not using color right now, but we would assume that these are coming together and that we would look at them coming together in phase. Now, I'm not going to draw the out of phase one, but I'll draw the colors over here such that this bonding orbital, this sigma orbital, has electron density that includes electron density between the atoms, so that in this region here, there is electron density. What really makes an antibonding orbital when they come together out of phase, let's do it this way, when they come together out of phase, is that, is that there is no electron density directly between them. The electron density in these orbitals, if there is to be any, is centered more on the atoms themselves. And so what we would see here is that we would see the 2 electrons coming down into here, and this orbital would be empty, and that would make a bonding orbital. And so in that way, we could use the carbon's orbitals. Now, this is a little bit harder to draw, that we take and we draw the carbon's four sp3 orbitals. So we'll say that these 2 are in plane, and then this one is coming forward towards us. So what I'll do is I'll put a little wedge bond in there to indicate that that one is coming towards us, and that this one is going back away, and that these are the 4 sp3 hybrids. and that those hybrid orbitals have bond angles of 109.5. And that's where we get the tetrahedral geometry. And so when we see something that is tetrahedral like this, tetrahedral in our brain needs to equate to sp3 hybridized. And that this sp3 hybridized, that statement is more important. It's more important because it's going to mean more. I mean, they're going to mean the same thing. When we say tetrahedral, we mean sp3 hybridized. And when we say sp3 hybridized, we mean tetrahedral. But that sp3 hybridized implies more than just tetrahedral. We're going to find that there is greater meaning underneath that. So every time we see a carbon, which is tetrahedral, that carbon can be said to be sp3 hybridized. And therefore, it implies geometry. It implies certain types of bonds that are within it. And we're going to see that it even implies more than just those types of bonds. So what we can do too, is we can say, well, now how does a carbon bond to another carbon? That this carbon can take its sp3 hybrid orbital. And I can have another carbon over here. And this carbon likewise brings its sp3 hybrid orbital, and they come together in phase. They also come together out of phase. So I'll do both. I'll show both bonds, or I'll show the bonding and the antibonding. And as they come together in this way, what we create is we create a sigma bond between the carbons. That sigma bond has electron density that goes over the two atoms and has two little back lobes. And so the bonding orbital would look like this. And the antibonding orbital is going to have essentially four lobes. It's going to have electron density that is going to reside over this carbon and around the backside, over this carbon and around the backside, and no electron density in between. And it's going to alternate. It's going to go green, green, yellow, yellow. And so this will be the sigma orbital, and this will be the sigma star. Bonding and antibonding.
Jason, I have a question.
Yeah, please.
So on the left where it's the carbon and it says sp3 underneath, so each carbon has one individual sp3 orbital, but
that is correct.
And then with the green and yellow, so that's just them separated?
It is not them separated. It is the same picture. It is the antibonding orbital that gets created. So we can think about them, we can push this down here and say, all right, this is the bonding interaction. And if I copy this and put it up here, if they came together out of phase, then it would look like this. And where they come together out of phase, they would subtract from one another and then make antibonding orbital.
And just like a repeat of the out of phase, that just means that they are either both positive or both negative, or both, one is positive, one is negative.
That is correct. What we're doing here is we're saying negative, positive, positive, negative, that the overlap is positive to positive. Here it would be negative, positive, negative, positive. And there they are of opposite sign and they cancel each other out.
And that one is what leads to the green and yellow.
That's correct.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, this goes for other elements as well. This is not only for carbon, so that we can look at other elements that can become tetrahedral, and other elements that can become tetrahedral likewise are sp3 hybridized. So we can take a look at what I want to do here. Maybe nitrogen is a good one to show. So if we take nitrogen and we take a tetrahedral nitrogen, so nitrogen that would have lone pairs and three bonds to it, this is tetrahedral as a parent geometry. We would call it really trigonal planar, trigonal pyramidal for its molecular geometry. But what this means is that this is sp3 hybridized. And as sp3 hybridized, when we look at the bonding that is happening within ammonia, where these are hydrogens, that each one of these bonds that are here are sp3 on nitrogen to hydrogen s, and that's the bond that is occurring there. And so we could look at that bond and we could say that we have a nitrogen hydrogen bond that is going to look almost identical. The orbitals are slightly different size, but almost identical to the carbon bond, and that the antibonding is going to look near identical as well, that there will be a lobe here and a lobe back there and a lobe out here in terms of the antibonding. And so we can color these in so that we have the sigma and the sigma star. And this is the sigma star orbital and the sigma orbital. Okay, and then what about this? This guy here, this guy is actually in a orbital that is an sp3 hybrid orbital. And that's what that lone pair sits in. And so these hybridizations work for other elements and other molecules other than carbon as well, which is important to understand. And that's the empty orbital, okay? We can also take a look at things like methylamine. So here what we have is we have a carbon bound to a nitrogen. The nitrogen has lone pairs. And we can now envision that this carbon has orbitals that extend out . I get my drawing right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to erase this guy and throw in this orbital, which is in plane. And then I'll throw in this one that's forward. And I'll throw in the one that's back. And so the hydrogens are combining with their s orbitals. That one I got to change. I'm going to make that the nitrogen on the other side. Okay, and then the nitrogen comes in here, and the nitrogen uses its sp3 hybrid to bond to that. It has an sp3 hybrid that has the lone pairs in it, and then it has two sp3 orbitals to hydrogen that wind up making those bonding orbitals as well. So this overlap that's here is an sp3 to sp3 sigma bond, whereas these are sp3 to S sigma bond. And that helps to explain the geometry that's going on within that molecule. Now, I keep saying that there's more than geometry that's going on, and that these hybridizations, when we say that an element is a specific hybridization, that that implies more than geometry, and it does. And we're going to get to that in just a second. So one of the things that we would say here is that it's important to recognize that this carbon is sp3. And that this nitrogen is also sp3. And that means that we get a different picture, that we need to visualize the orbitals and the geometry when we look at that molecule, and that those orbitals and geometry are going to be important moving forward. Okay, so what happens then when we don't have things that are tetrahedral? What happens when we have things that are trigonal planar? So trigonal planar starts to become a question. Trigonal planar molecules are things easily demonstrated through ethylene. This is an alkene. It's ethylene. And it has a double bond in it. And so what does this double bond geometry look like? How is this thing made? And what is the hybridization on these carbons?
Is it a pi bond?
It is a pi bond. How do we get 120 degree bond angle? So all of these things are things that we want to be able to address with this hybridization model and natural bonding theory. So what we did when we looked at carbon, if I may zoom back up here for a minute, is we said, all right, what I need is I needed four orbitals. So when I needed four orbitals, the way that I got to that is I combined four orbitals to get to those four bonding orbitals. And that's how I got to the sp3, right? And so coming back down here, what we would say is that when we were looking at tetrahedral carbon, we needed four hybrids to make the four bonds. And so what we did is we combined S plus PX plus PY plus PZ, and that gave us four at sp3, and it was 1/4 S plus 3/4 P. And that was sort of its geometry. But when we look at a carbon now that is built this direction, I think, well, how many things do I need to bond to? I really only need to bond to three things. And if I need to bond to three things, those things being atoms, then what I need is I need only three hybrids. So to get three hybrids, what I'll do is I'll take the S plus the PX plus I'll take the PY, and the PZ I'm going to throw out. I'm not going to need it. And so when I bring these together, what I'm going to get is I'm going to get three hybrid orbitals. So the combination of these three makes three hybrids at sp2 now, because there's only two p's that are going into it. And so this orbital is going to be 1/3 s and 2/3 p. It's going to have more s character and less P character. So what is that going to look like? It's going to look a lot like my other orbital. This is an sp2 hybrid, but when we bring it together and we look at it together with an sp3, here's what we see. So comparing, what we find is that if we draw a line here, and then we put the sp3 hybrid here, we find that the sp3 hybrid is a lot more P character life, a lot longer, and the sp2 is shorter and sort of stockier. And that we can look at sort of this as being a length of the orbital. And that the sp2 is shorter. Now, that kind of makes sense because it has less P character, more S, less P. And the other one, this one has more P. And so having less P character means that that orbital is going to have more S character and is going to be centered more near the nucleus. And so this line is sort of representing the nucleus and the distance that that orbital extends out beyond the nucleus. That geometry change has certain implications in it. So let's take a look at what those implications really are. When we go through and we take a look at the sigma bond that gets created between two carbons. So if I want to do a carbon to carbon bond here, and this is sp3 to sp3, we've already looked at this, and what this orbital looks like is it has this longer orbital that extends out from the carbon, and this carbon, that long orbital that extends out to make the overlap. And this would be the sigma bond that I'm representing, which is the sp3 to sp3. And it has a bond length here that we can measure that is around 1.54 angstroms. But now when I look at a carbon-carbon bond that is sp2 to sp2, the difference is that the carbons need to come closer together because the orbitals aren't as big. And because the orbitals are shorter, in order to get the orbital overlap that I need, the orbitals actually need to come in quite a bit. And that makes the bond shorter. So this becomes 1.34 angstroms. And I get a shorter bond. Still a sigma bond. It still looks just about the same. It's just a much smaller bond. Due to shorter orbitals. And so what we can do is we can relate bond length to hybridization. Hybridization starts to tell us something about bond length. We can tell which bonds are longer and which bonds are shorter by the type of bond and the type of hybrid orbitals that are used to make the bond, which is really kind of a cool concept. Now, beyond that, it also helps us to understand geometry. So we said that we make these three sp2 hybrids now, and we get three of them. Well, when you take three orbitals and you center them around a carbon, what we get is we get an orbital that extends out in this direction. We get an orbital that extends back and an orbital that extends forward. And the bond angle between any two of them is 120 degrees. So this one is coming forward out towards us. This one is going back. And this one is in the plane of the board. And these are the three sp2 hybrids. And you say, all right, where did that p where did that pz go to? And if this is our z-axis, our x-axis, and our y-axis, the z orbital pz is sitting right here. So I'm going to give this a different color altogether, not coloring it now for occupation of electrons or positive or negative, but coloring it because this is a pz atomic orbital. And that pz atomic orbital is still there in the picture. And we need to remember that we haven't used it. And the others are the hybrid orbitals. So let's choose to make the hybrid orbitals, I don't have a good color because I've used all my colors that I want to use. So maybe I'll make them, that's too close to what I'm doing. Let's make them green. So these sitting in here are the three sp2 orbitals. So that makes it pretty clear what's going on with that. Now, how does that get us to that double bond? So we were looking again and we say, all right, what is it about this double bond? Somebody said that this was a pi bond, and it is indeed, but it is more than a pi bond. It is a pi bond in addition to a sigma bond. There are actually two bonds that are taking place here. So what we find in that ethylene molecule is that if we take a look at that molecule and we draw it out, what we find is that we get the sigma bond that is represented here from these sp2 to sp2. This is the sigma. There is in each one of these the hydrogen bonds, which I'm not going to draw all of those out with their orbitals. I'm going to draw them this way so that they don't obscure the diagram. But each one of these would be an sp2 to s sigma bond. And then what is that pi bond? That pi bond is constituted by the overlap of the unused pz. I seem to be having trouble trying to get a good drawing. I just need to slow down. Okay, so here, this bond is pz to pz, and this is what we call a pi bond. Usually we represent it with the symbol pi. And that is the pi bond. And the pi bond is formed in a very similar way. So we need to understand sort of what a pi bond looks like. So let's take and show how we can do orbital overlap both in phase and out of phase in order to make a pi bond. So that we understand sort of what happens here. As we've said, when we make these bonds, they rely on orbital overlap. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get my orbitals close enough so that I can investigate orbital overlap. And we'll take this picture and we'll duplicate it. And we'll look at out of phase and in phase coming together of these orbitals. So remember, higher energy is always where they're out of phase. Lower energy is always where they are in phase. So when these come together, they make a picture where the orbitals actually form sort of a clover leaf, where they push each other and subtract each other from the overlap. And these would alternate in color, and they would be green, green, and yellow, and yellow. This is the anti-pi bond, and we do that the same way that we do with sigma. So this would be the pi star. This would be the empty orbital. And then this in phase would give me an orbital on the top and an orbital on the bottom. And one lobe of this is going to be blue, and one lobe is going to be red. And this constitutes the pi bond. And this would be the occupied orbital. And where the carbons sit, is the carbons sit in this range. And so the pi bond is fundamentally different than a sigma bond. Notice that the density is above and below, and there's a node in the middle. The sigma bond, when we look at the sigma and what the sigma looks like, the sigma always has electron density that covers in between the atoms. And so the sigma bond always looks this way. And the sigma bond is fundamentally different than the pi bond. This is electron density in between atoms. And this is electron density above and below. That difference right there explains a tremendous amount of reactivity of these different types of molecules. Pi bonds, although being stronger because they're shorter, the pi bonds typically are more reactive than sigma bonds. Why are they more reactive? Because things can actually access them. They're accessible on the outside of the molecule, whereas these are tied up in between the atoms and not easily accessible. And so we find that while pi bonds, when you go to break a pi bond, the pi bond is stronger, or I should say that a carbon-carbon double bond is stronger. And if you need to break the double bond, you're breaking both the pi and the sigma. And so therefore it constitutes a stronger bond. It's a shorter bond for a stronger bond, but the pi bond itself is more accessible and actually more reactive than a sigma bond, simply because of its location and where it's found on the outside of the molecule. All right. How are we doing? You guys keeping up with me? All right, so that shorter component is really important. What we can do from here is we can also take a look at other things with pi bonds. Other types of pi bonds are very similar. So if we take a look at formaldehyde, for instance, hang on a second, that was not supposed to happen. There we go, back up and running. If we take a look at the bonding in formaldehyde, and what I'll do is I'll draw formaldehyde on its side. Formaldehyde has a carbon-oxygen double bond. But what we see in that carbon-oxygen double bond is that the bonding is very similar to the carbon-carbon double bond. It's just making a carbon-oxygen sigma bond and a carbon-oxygen pi bond. And the oxygen has its own hybridization as well, which we're going to kind of gloss over because that gets a little bit more complicated. But what we find is that there is in this molecule a sigma bond that arises from the sp2 orbital on the carbon and the sp2 orbital on the oxygen. And so we get sp2, sp2 orbital overlap, and that constitutes the sigma bond. And then there is also from those pi orbitals, there's the pi bond in there as well. And I think what I want to do is I'm just going to shrink this down. Make it fit in tight. And then that'll allow me to put the pi bond outside of it down below it. And that's the pi bond, which is the PZ to PZ on oxygen. And that winds up making the pi bond there. And the lone pairs on the oxygen, they are in hybridized orbitals on the oxygen. So we could look at the hybridized orbitals that come off that oxygen, and we will get an orbital that extends out this way, which will have one lone pair in it, and an orbital that extends out this way, which will have the other lone pair. And these guys are in sp2 hybrid orbitals. And then you also have the hydrogens, which are out there. And so that bonding that is within that formaldehyde is darn near identical to the bonding that is in the carbon-carbon double bond. It is much, much the same. Maybe let's take a second and take a look at some of these orbitals. Let me see if I can get a new window for us and take you to chemed.study and show you what I'm talking about. So I'm going to take and stop the screen share. Screen share Safari. Easiest way that I get here is through chemed.study, the C4 web server, Cabrillo College, and then I have a research version that's not linked through a link. And in here, you can see I've got the different orbitals that I wanted to show. And we were looking at the sigma bonds. I'll show the sigma bond within methane real quick. So we're back in methane, and I'm going to show you that sigma bond carbon hydrogen sigma bond. It's a Rydberg. This is a bonding orbital, C1 to H5. That's the one that I want. So there is the hydrogen carbon sigma bond and the little lobe in the back. It looks a lot like an sp3 hybrid, except that it encompasses the hydrogen. So this is a bonding orbital. What we'd like to do is now put this together with ethane and see the carbon-carbon sigma bond and see how that carbon-carbon sigma bond is different. So let's go back to the job manager and let's go to ethane. I have two different ones and I don't know why. Oh, because one's ethene. Let's go to ethane. All right, here's ethane. What I want to do is I want to look at the carbon-carbon sigma bond in ethane. So we'll go down to the bonding orbitals, natural bond orbitals. I'll extend this out, get all 42. The one that I really want is the bonding orbital, carbon-1 to carbon-2. Everything else here are bonds to the hydrogen. So this is the first one that I want. And that shows that density right in between the two carbons and the two smaller lobes on the backside. That is the sigma bond. That represents the electron density in between the two carbons. Okay, let's go to ethene. Let's go to ethene and take a look and see the sigma bond and the pi bond in ethene. All right, now note the geometry that this is trigonal planar, 120 degree bond angles, right? And so what I can do is I can look between any three atoms and I can click and investigate. I can ask it, what is the bond angle between 3, 2, and 6? And it gives me bond angles of 116.37. Why? Because 120 is idealized. And based on the actual repulsions within the molecule, if I go carbon, carbon, hydrogen, that's a little bit bigger than 121. So if this one opens up a little bit, then that means the other one has to close down a little bit. So that's the differences. All those bond angles that we gave you where we told you, hey, it's 109.5, it's 120, it's 180. Yeah, not always. Those are idealized numbers and they're not exact. Every molecule is going to have its own exact number that is going to be a little bit different than those idealized numbers. Okay, but what we can see very clearly is that this is trigonal planar. We can see the geometry and we can go and we can grab the natural bonding orbitals. And I want to first look at the sigma and then I want to look at the pi that's after that. So let's go grab that sigma bond. That should be this one. Nope, that's the pi bond. How did I do that? Maybe because I need to zoom this out. I missed it. Carbon one, carbon two. I guess that one's the sigma bond. Okay, there's the sigma. You can clearly see the difference in the sigma. It looks a lot like the other sigma. The only thing that you notice is that these little lobes on the backside are smaller than they were in a carbon that was sp3 to sp3. This is now sp2 to sp2. And the bond length is shorter. And the little backside orbitals are shorter, but that's that sigma bond. Now I can take a look at the pi bond that goes above and below that plane. So that pi bond is the first one. And there's the pi bond. So we get a good idea of what that pi bond looks like. Notice that the electron density is above and below the plane, not in between the plane. A node exists in between the plane. Okay. So we have a good idea of the visual representation, the actual sort of orbitals based on molecular orbital theory and natural bonding theory from the computer, that are lining up with the things that I've drawn on paper. Okay, let me stop that for a second. Let me ask if there's any questions now that we've kind of gone over those images. Just check in with you guys. Everything's going okay? All right, let's take a look then at the next geometry that we need to deal with, because we still need to understand linear. And we haven't done linear yet. Oh, I can show you formaldehyde too. I'll catch formaldehyde when we go back. I'm not gonna stop right now. Let's keep going and we'll catch formaldehyde when we come back. Let's talk about alkynes. In an alkyne, like acetylene, we have a carbon-carbon triple bond. And so what we need to do is we need to be able to get to something that is 180 degrees. And the same theory applies here. We take a look at a carbon and we say, all right, how many things does the carbon need to bond to? This is bonded to two.
That means I need two hybrids. So with two hybrids, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the S orbital and I'm going to combine it with the 2px. And I'm going to leave out the 2py and the 2pz. So as I bring these two together, what this is going to make is it's going to make two sp hybrids. And the sp hybrid is going to be quite a bit fatter and quite a bit shorter. And those two sp hybrids are then going to give me the linear geometry. They're going to align opposite each other around the atom and give me 180 degree bond angles. And what happens to the 2PY and 2PZ? These are unused at the moment. Actually, they're going to become pi bonds later on, but they're unused in the hybridization. So now when I take a look and I go back to that idea, that diagram of hybrid orbitals, and I look at what happens when I relate sp3 to sp2 to sp, the sp3 orbital is the largest, most p-like. The sp2 orbital is shorter, and the sp orbital is even shorter yet. And so this is bond length, or I should say orbital length, really more than bond length. But that orbital length relates directly to bond length based on hybridization. So now what's going to happen is when I take a look at the carbon-carbon bond that was a sigma bond that was sp3 to sp3, this was about 1.54 angstroms. When I take a look at the carbon-carbon double bond, where this is sp2 to sp2, this was about 1.34 angstroms. Now, I'm going to get even smaller when I come into a triple bond, because the orbitals are smaller, I need more orbital overlap. The nuclei must get closer together in order to get that additional orbital overlap. That means, necessitates, that the bond actually shrinks. The bond length is smaller. So this becomes sp to sp, and this is about 1.2 angstroms. And so the bonds keep getting smaller based on the orbital overlap. And this is the critical component. Because the hybrid orbitals decrease in size, from sp3 to sp2 to sp, to make the bond, requires orbital overlap. That orbital overlap requires that the atoms get closer together and the bond length gets shorter. And that means that the bond gets shorter. So that's kind of what's happening here. in terms of these hybridizations. Now, that helps us to understand that when we go to make this carbon-carbon bond, that I'm going to have an sp to sp overlap. So here's my sigma bond in sp to sp overlap. But then what are those other two orbitals doing, the py and the pz? Well, what they're doing is that...
See a little bit more of what you wrote up there.
Yep.
Thank you.
So what those orbitals are doing is they are combining to form the pi bonds. So this orbital down here this is going to be the PZ, and that's going to form one pi bond. And then there's another orbital that extends out this way and goes back, and extends out this way and goes back. And this makes the other pi bond, and this is the PY. And there are two pi bonds. And those two pi bonds are 90 degrees to each other. And that's where the other pi bond comes in. So if we want to take a look at what that pi bond looks like, and I think that what I do, maybe to do this illustration just a little bit better, is that we get the carbon, these are so much easier to draw on a board for some reason. There's one bond there. And what I can do is take and say that this guy is one set of pi bonds. And that the other one is the other set of pi bond. That makes it a little bit clearer. And how they're 90 degrees to each other. So maybe let's go take a look at that part for a second and see what that looks like. So let me stop that share. Let me go back and share these orbitals. And I said, one of the things that I wanted to do here was before I ended, I wanted to show you formaldehyde and the pi bond in formaldehyde. This is probably the sigma bond in formaldehyde. There it is. So there's the sigma bond. You can see how the sigma bond, whether it's between carbon and carbon or carbon and oxygen, the sigma bond looks very similar. So we get an idea of what a sigma bond actually looks like. And then we can go and we can grab that pi bond. And we can see that the pi bond between carbon and oxygen looks exactly like a pi bond between carbon and carbon. That the pi bond is very, very similar. Let's go take a look at the triple bond in acetylene. So here's the acetylene. Now, acetylene doesn't demonstrate right. You say, wait, there's no triple bond there. Well, there is a triple bond there. It's just not being demonstrated correctly. It turns out that molecules that are linear are very difficult to calculate because the calculation fails when the dihedral angle, which is an angle between four atoms, is ill-defined. And when you have four atoms in a row, there is no dihedral angle. It's undefined. And so this type of molecule is a little bit difficult to calculate. I think that what I can do is I can clean up and ask it to generate bonds. No, still giving this the single. It's not going to do it. Okay, doesn't matter. We can look at the bond length between carbon one and carbon two. We can see that this is about 1.2 angstroms, 1.186 would round to 1.2. So that is the distance in that pi in that carbon-carbon triple bond. Let's go down and grab the sigma bond. This should be the sigma. Need the rotation tool. There we go. You can see that that sigma bond, the back lobes get even smaller. In fact, they're disappearing into the carbons, but that is definitely the round sigma bond. And then I can look at the first pi bond. Notice that that pi bond is up and down. If I grab the second pi bond and I don't change the geometry, I don't rotate it, the second pi bond should be orthogonal to that. So let's grab this one. And there it is, it's switched so that it's 90 degrees to us and I have to rotate it in order to put it back in the same plane. Unfortunately, I cannot visualize two orbitals simultaneously. So this is the best I've got, is to be able to show them one at a time. And that if I orient this one in the horizontal plane, that when I go and I click the other one, it puts it in the vertical plane. Grab the wrong one. It should put it in the vertical plane. Nope, that's the, come on, one more time. There it is, into the vertical plane. So so the two pi bonds are there simultaneously. And that gives it its geometry. All right, what do we need to do from here? We don't usually, I want to make sure that I don't go too far ahead of where I want to be. Yeah, I'm going to do it here. This is the perfect spot. What does this imply then? How can we utilize this information? Because I said that there was going to be a lot more that hybridization was going to do for us. Hybridization was not just about bond length. It can be about bond length. But it can also be that it can give us other types of information. So first off, what we can do is we can take a molecule, draw a molecule, and we can ask about the hybridizations within the molecule. I'm going to leave that tetrahedral. Let's put one more carbon on here and give this a triple bond out to a hydrogen. Okay, so now what I can do is I can ask you a lot of questions based on the information that we've just learned. We can go through and we can ask, give the hybridization of each carbon. And in giving me the hybridizations of each one of these carbons, you could then tell me, I can put an arrow to this carbon here, and you can tell me what the hybridization of that carbon is. How would I define that hybridization? You want to use the chat? Want to put it in the chat?
Is it sp2?
It is sp2. What about this carbon? You guys are not willing to try. You got to be willing to try.
Same thing, SP2.
SP2. What about this carbon?
SP3.
SP3. What about this guy?
Would that just be SP?
SP. What about this one?
Much of the same.
SP. Okay, congratulations. That's a really important skill, just being able to go through and look at the carbons and to give each of their hybridizations. Now, hybridization also means geometry. So what that hybridization means is that this SP2 is trigonal planar, tetrahedral, SP3, linear, SP, linear, SP. So the geometry is defined by the hybridization. Pusha, you had a hand, or somebody had a hand up.
Oh, no, I'm okay now. Yeah, I think it's because you just mentioned the reason for each of them separately when you mentioned about SP being linear. And I'm like, okay, that actually makes sense. Like they each have a like a certain shape, or is that
the right?
Yes.
That's right. So there's two ways to do this. One way is to do and recognize the shape. One way is to say, okay, this thing is tetrahedral, therefore it's SP3. The other way to do it is to count. So you look at the carbon and you say, how many things is the carbon bound to? Bound to 1, 2, 3. So you count S, P1, P2, SP2. This carbon is SP2 because it is bound to a hydrogen, and another carbon. So this carbon is bound to 3 things. That's SP2. An S plus 2 Ps. If I want to do that at the tetrahedral carbon, and I say, well, what about this carbon here? Then what I'm doing is I'm saying, all right, S, P1, P2, P3. It's bound to 4 different things, and that is the SP3. What if it's just bounded? So I'm not counting the bonds. I'm counting what it's bonded to. That's really critical. What do I do with this one? Erase it, and then that's a problem. What I do with this one is I count, all right, this one is only bound to 2 things, S, P. Done. That carbon is an SP carbon. Okay, let me take and redraw this. Let's take the same drawing, but I'm going to make the drawing just a little bit easier to see. So we've got carbons which are double bonded. We've got a carbon which has 2 hydrogens on it. A carbon which is triple bonded to another carbon. And these guys have hydrogens on it. Okay, I'm going to label two of the bonds, and I'm going to ask you A or B. Which bond is longer, A or B? So what did we learn about orbitals? We learned that orbitals have length and that they are not all the same. And that as we change hybridization, we change orbital size. SP3, SP2, SP. And that based on the orbital size, that orbitals contribute to the bond length. The shorter the hybrid orbital, the shorter the bond length. So which of these bonds? Now I've asked you which one is longer, so you got to reverse it. The longer the hybrid orbital, the longer the bond length. So which one of these bonds is longer, A or B?
Would it be A?
It would be A.
So could you kind of think of it in a way of like the more lines drawn in between is like, I guess like rubber bands, and the more rubber bands you put in between, the closer they're being pulled together because there's more strength.
That is that is a good way to think about it, but that is not going to help you in a minute.
Okay.
So what we want to do is we want to work from the ideas that I've presented, because the ideas are critical to getting the answer right. So trying to reduce it to an easily memorizable analogy is not going to help you, because what it's going to do is you're trying to simplify it. And if you try to simplify it, the next question is going to be extraordinarily challenging for you.
Okay.
So we don't want to simplify it. So I'm going to warn you against that. So number one, the mantra goes like this, that the longer hybrid implies more distance between atoms to achieve a bonding interaction. Actually, I'm going to reword this. Hang on a second. I'm going to completely reword this. I'm going to go from the way that I normally do it, and then I'll reverse it at the end. It'll make more sense. Okay, so SP3 is longer than SP2 is longer than SP. Shorter orbitals require atoms to get closer in order to bond for orbital overlap. Make a bond. SP to SP, shortest bond. And therefore, SP2 to SP2 is the longest. And so the answer becomes A. That's basically what we want to do. And if you can put an image to it, and then we can even put an image to the orbitals themselves so that we can say here, right, here is an SP to SP. And then we can use the longer orbitals and this is the distance that is the bonding distance that we're making, and this becomes SP2 to SP2 and this is the longer bond here, and that's what we're looking at, is that the nuclei can be farther apart and still get the overlap. Okay, so why am I cautioning you then against simplifying the model? Let me take this image and ask another question. A, B. Which bond is longer? A or B?
Is this a trick question?
Jonathan, it is not a trick question, my friend. One of those bonds is longer and one of those bonds is shorter. Bond length
is not about single, double, or triple. Bond length is related to hybridization. Use the hybridization to come up with an argument and tell me which bond is longer and which bond is shorter.
B?
B is longer?
Oh, sorry, A.
A is longer. I concur. B is shorter. A is longer. Let's see why. Let's go through the reasoning. Give me the hybridization of this atom. What hybridization is this carbon?
SP2?
SP2. Give me the hybridization up here. What's this carbon?
SP3.
SP3. Give me the hybridization of this carbon.
SP.
SP. Okay, so A is made up of an SP2 to an SP3. So that means that I have a short orbital, shorter base to a long orbital. B is made up of an SP to SP3. This is the shortest orbital right here. And these two are the same in terms of SP3. So given that this one is longer, than SP, that makes this one the longer orbital. The longer bond. And so your answer is A. Do you see why we don't want to simplify this? Because simplifying the model doesn't allow you to be able to figure out which bond is longer or shorter, because we need to know the hybridizations and we need to build from the hybridizations. And so we can do this for any molecule. And we can come up with which bond is longer and which bond is shorter. Okay, so I got 2 minutes. Give me 2 minutes real quick. Let me stop this share. Let me go back to screen sharing WebMO. I wasn't prepared for this, but doesn't mean that we can't do it real quick. Let me go to the job manager, new job. Let me build out, let's see, I had a double bond to a single bond, to a single bond, to a triple bond. We'll ask it to clean that up, wrench it, and then we'll take it to, ask it to do a geometry optimization at Mopac. Not Gaussian. Gaussian will take too long. Geometry optimization. PM3 should be fine. Singlet multiplicity. Go for it. Refresh. Okay, here's our molecule, right? And I asked you which bond was longer. I asked you, I said between 1 and 2 was A, and between 2 and 7 was B, right? So here is the distance between 1 and 2. Can you see the distance down there? 1.493 angstroms. Here's the distance between 1 and 7, 1.44. So 1.44 versus 1.49, not a great amount of distance difference, but definitely A was longer because of the hybridizations. I can get that to the extreme. I don't know if this is going to allow me to do this. This job may fail, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to make a triple bond here, a single bond, a triple bond, and then I'm going to take it out to two singles. And let's see if it can do this. It might crash on this. I might have to do something special to get this to get the geometry for me. but let's try. Come on, come on. Yes. Okay. What I wanted to show you here is that the carbon-carbon triple bond is supposed to be the shortest bond, right? So if I look at this carbon-carbon triple bond, this is sp to sp, 1.2 angstroms, right? 1.194 rounds to 1.2 angstroms. This single bond out here, I said was supposed to be the longest bond, 1.5 angstroms. Everything's going hunky-dory exactly like it's supposed to be, right? What do you think the distance between 4 and 3 is? Is it more like this single bond or more like this triple bond? Anybody have a guess?
How long do you have? You mean you walk out the door in a second?
Nobody wants to guess. 1.369. I don't want hybridizations. 1.2, 1.369, 1.5. It's closer to the triple bond than it is to the single bond. Why? Because atom number 4 and atom number 3 are both sp hybridized, meaning the bond, the sigma bond here, is sp hybridized. If I did this at a higher theory, it comes out almost exactly the same as this carbon-carbon triple bond. Why? Because it's the same hybrid orbitals that are going into making that triple bond as are going into making that sigma bond. And therefore, the bond orbital is almost the same. Okay, so when I was saying that hybridization is going to be key to all kinds of molecular properties, it is. It tells you more than just geometry. It tells you about bond length. Later on, it's going to tell us about electronegativity. After that, it's going to tell us about acidity. We're going to keep going back to this hybridization model. Hybridization is critical to everything that we do from here on out. It is a foundational concept of being able to use natural bonding theory to understand the hybridization of an atom, to understand the properties of the molecule that that atom is in. And it affects all kinds of things going forward. So while I've been building this, the utility of it all was just in the last 5 minutes. All right, we'll do some more when we come back next week. But what do you need to do? A couple things that I got to note real quick. You should be working on problems on formal charge. You should be working on problems on Lewis structures. You should now start working on problems on hybridization and on bond length. And that's the focus that you should be putting in right now on those topics. We have an SI session that I think Chloe is going to hold on Friday, tomorrow. Chloe sent me the time. I'm going to send it out at that email address at ochem@cabrillo.edu. And I'll tell you guys how to log in for that SI session. She's going to have some practice problems. I think she's going to have formal charge and Lewis structures. I might even throw some bond link things in there for her to do as well. And I'll get that information out to you here fairly quickly so you have it before the end of the day. All right? I think that's all I got for you. I'll stay on the line if anybody has any questions. And other than that, I'll see you on Tuesday. Or if you're in lab, I'll see you on Monday. All right, take care, you guys. I'm going to stop the recording, and I'll hang on for any questions if anybody has any.